from the world's leading maritime and offshore news website, gcaptain.com, comes the talk show for maritime professionals and enthusiasts, bringing you the latest news, discussion, and interviews with the industry's movers and shakers. This is GCaptain Radio with your hosts, Jeff Eccles and Captain John Conrad.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of GCaptain Radio. My name is Jeff Eccles and in the studio with me is John Conrad. We are your hosts. Welcome, John. How are you today?
Doing good.
Good to see you. This broadcast is for the week of March 24th, 2014. Listeners, this is the place we bring you the latest news and happenings in the maritime and offshore industry. And as we discussed last week, we are going to select one topic and delve deeper into that one topic. We got some good feedback with our new format, so we hope that you enjoy it. This week, we will be talking about transporting large objects via water. And what spurred this topic is the fact that the world's largest propeller, or at least the suspected largest propeller in the world, is having to be moved quite a distance. So it poses its challenges. We've got John Conrad here, who is a unlimited master sea captain, so he can talk about how exactly that is done. So John, let's get right into this subject.
Yeah, and this dovetails a little bit with last week's subjects. When they locate this plane that went down, they are going to recover the entire plane, as we discussed, and rebuild it in a warehouse somewhere to get that forensic evidence from, figure out exactly what happened. There's some thought that the wheel might have burned, and they want that evidence of the actual burn. So when they lift all this pieces of the aircraft, they got to transport it somewhere to rebuild the entire plane. How do they do it? It's going to be very large pieces, very unusual, because they're going to be ripped apart. Very difficult to make a storage plane, stuff that's not going to fit right in a typical shipping container, which is how most stuff is formed.
And pardon me for interrupting, but in that situation as well, you've got, of course, an additional challenge. You're out in the middle of the ocean with 8 or 10 or 12 foot swells and 5, 10, 15 knot winds. I would imagine that adds a lot of challenges as opposed to being in safe harbor where you've got large cranes that are loading objects onto your boat and your boat is staying level and you can lash whatever you need to lash down in calm conditions. So that really adds a challenging dynamic, doesn't it, being out at sea?
Absolutely, and I've done a lot of subsea lifts, as they are called, where the vessel is actually a crane on board the vessel or a derrick. Now they've done this before. The first drill ship, it's still in use. It's the only U.S. flag drill ship in existence. It's a Glomar Explorer. It was built by Howard Hughes to recover a sunken Soviet submarine. So this Soviet submarine sank, and the CIA wanted to recover it, to analyze what technology the Soviets were using. So they built this drill ship to pick up and recover this entire submarine. So it is possible. The biggest, and the weather is a major factor. If the weather gets bad enough, we shut down all lift operations. But the real difficult part is the heave. So the whole ship is going up and down in the way. There's surge, which is forward and aft motion. So as the wave hits it, the ship's going to go backwards a little bit aft, and then it's going to surge forward as the propeller compensates. Sway, which is the moving of the compass, port and starboard. And then surge, which is up and down. Ships are always moving in those three directions.
Which from my experience, the limited experience that I have, the surge was really something that we dealt with that was probably the most challenging out of the three that you just mentioned. It was a relatively smaller vessel, 285 feet, and we had a big A-frame on the back. And when we would deploy, we call them fish, but these instrument-laden cages that we would tow behind the boat, the ship, and they probably weighed, maybe a ton, 1,500 pounds, 2,000 pounds, somewhere around there. But boy, oh boy, when we would have to pull those out of the water off the stern of the ship, And I remember when we'd be in any kind of seas, that surge going up and down, and we had to be so careful. You know, we'd get those, I forget what they're called, guidelines or taglines. We'd put additional lines on it when it came up with some long poles and kind of hit it with these hooks. And we just had to be so careful because the thing would literally pop out of the water on a surge and then go crashing back down, which, of course, the scientists that we had on board, they didn't want us to have that happen at all. And then once it got out of the water, it was swaying back and forth, to and fro, and we just had to be very careful with it. So that, to me, is on a mini scale, and the objects that we're going to be talking about are on a massive scale, which would seem to just compound all those challenges.
Yes, and there are solutions to surge and sway, dynamic positioning. Most basic would be bow thrusters. Thrusters on the bow that are positioned to thrust perpendicular to the keel so that it prevents that sway, the port and starboard motion. And then surge can be controlled by a computer that's at least hooked up to one position reference system, GPS. Sometimes they lay sonar buoys if they're doing a real critical operation,
wow,
like all the drill ships. So the computer is constantly adjusting the propulsion forward and aft and these bow thrusters doing sway. Now in the drill ships, we have rotating thrusters, so the entire propeller rotates 360 degrees, and the computer can compensate for surge and sway by how it maneuvers these thrusters.
And so that I'm clear and the listeners are clear, and that's all done by computer. I mean, you as you don't have a helmsman doing any of that. You guys flip a switch up there on the bridge and activate those systems, and the computer does that. Is that correct?
Correct. It's okay. All going to be monitored in the parameters, how much surge and sway, and there are different algorithms which the operator can select. So there is some skill involved, but the computer does the heavy lifting, as you would.
Right.
You still have heave.
Yes.
There's no way to prevent the whole ship from going
right
up and down. And they've compensated it for, you know, some areas they use semi-submersibles, which are basically catamaran hulls with a big platform, to allow the bulk of the waves to kind of go between the platform and the actual underwater. Not 100% effective. The most recent, my last ship, I was in Korea. We were building it. It was a $750 million drill ship. That had what was called a heave-compensated crane. So the whole crane platform was on a hydraulic platform. And we have gyro compass and motion sensing equipment that is at the center of gravity, can feel the actual ship moving up and down.
Yeah.
And then the hydraulic platform on the crane will move up and down. So as the ship is moving up and down, the crane operator is just absolutely steady.
Amazing.
But a lot of these, there are very few of these very expensive cranes, there are very few, whether it's going to be used in the salvage operation, I don't know. But here we're talking about, once the stuff is up, how do you move it around the world?
Right.
And that's a big question. Most of what we transport is put in a container. But this particular propeller that we're talking about is the world's largest container ship propeller. And it was built in Germany. And the ship, the container ship, is being built in South Korea. So they have to move this enormous propeller from Hamburg, Germany to South Korea. How do you do it? It doesn't fit in a container. Can't be taken apart. So this particular propeller was actually put on a container ship. So they had a few layers of containers underneath the inside the container ship hull. And then they put the propeller down on top of this container. Now, the one thing with these heavy lift loads is these ships rely on going in and out of port quickly. So the load time of these container ships is very important, because every time the ship is sitting in port, it's not moving, it's not making money. So one thing, when you want to transport a heavy and unusual item, the cost is going to be much higher than transporting a container ship. And it's not that this particular propeller is only taking up the space of a few containers. So it's the width of about 3 or 4 containers. So they're going to get charged for the amount of containers that can't be put in that space. So the cost of lifting this object, transporting it on this container ship, will be at least the cost of transporting 4 containers. But the real cost is the amount of delay in loading this thing.
Right.
And so in this particular one, they had to first hire a barge with a very large crane in order to lift this up and put it on the container. And then they have to make sure that it's properly lashed. This is also a very heavy object, 131 tons. So that limits where on the ship you can put it. A lot of times the unusually large objects that can't be put in a container will just be lashed on top of all the other containers. So you'll have, you know, the container stacked, and they may not stack it as high as normal. And then say you want to transport a boat, small yacht, they'll actually lift it up and place it right down on top of the containers and lash it. But because this is so heavy, if you were to strap this very high on the top of the containers, it's going to cause a whole
you've got a serious stability issue, don't you? Yeah.
So it has to be put down low, and that means that the cargo plan has to, it's got to arrive at the exact moment where they have these available bays, and then the operations, container loading operations, will either move to a different area of the ship or cease altogether, and then they'll load this propeller inside the ship. Now, this is a large item. Now, what happens when we get something? Well, first let's talk about, this is going to take a long time to get, it's going to take weeks to get to South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
What if you had to move it quickly?
And before you move specifically off of the propeller, I looked at the article. It's about 34 feet across, and I didn't realize it weighed that much, 131 tons. So it's very, very heavy, very dense, obviously. Do you know what those are made out of?
Yeah, it looks like brass, but it's going to be a custom, very guarded secret what the propeller, you know, brass, all metal is a composite of different metals.
Right.
So what you put inside those
sure.
metals. Stainless steel has something different than regular steel, the amount of carbon in it, and then they have extra components to strengthen it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically a brass composite metal that's been, the actual components of that brass have been tweaked to provide the best performance and cost savings for this propeller. So I don't think anyone knows exactly what material it is other than the engineers at the propeller manufacturer.
But. And there's a great photo of it on G-Captain, and it's pretty. I mean, I look at it, it's a it looks like a work of art. It's beautiful.
Yes, gorgeous nice. Propeller.
Okay. All right, okay.
So when I was building the ship in South Korea, one of the interesting things, or the difficult things about building a large ship like that is you have parts coming from around the world. So two interesting things I wanted to talk about was, one was the heavy lift crane. This huge heave compensated crane was all built in Europe, and we had to transport it to South Korea. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But another thing was some of the subsea risers. So the thing that actually connects the drill ship down to the wellhead, which is sitting on the bottom of the ocean floor. We needed some of this riser in order to test the subsea equipment, and we needed it quickly, or it was going to push back the entire build schedule of the drill ship. Now, the company making the subsea equipment was in Houston, Texas, and they were behind schedule. Now, it wasn't the shipyard's fault, it wasn't our fault that this was delayed, it was clearly their fault, but the ship I was building had a day rate of over $500,000 a day.
Wow.
So every day of delay, the company, BP, was going to contract it from the company I was working for, Pride. So BP was paying Pride $500,000 a day once it got on contract. But it doesn't get on contract until A, it's been built, and B, passes all of BP's tests. So every day of delay cost my company $500,000. And
you've got some bean counters back in the office, the corporate office, going nuts every day that goes by.
Yes, so the decision the CEO made was a little bit shocking because of the cost. We had this huge piece of equipment that needed to get there this week. How do you do that? And what we did was hire the Antonov. Antonov is an aircraft manufacturer out of the former Soviet Union. It's actually, there are 22,000 planes built by Antonov in service now. There are more Antonov planes than anything else than Boeing or Cessnas in the world right now, which is an unusual fact.
Yeah.
But they're best known for the AN-22, which is the largest plane in the world. Now, I first had a touch of experience with this. I was sailing in Newport, and there was an America's Cup boat that needed to be transported from the West Coast to the East Coast. They were testing it. They were doing the trials on the West Coast, and then it had to come to the East Coast. And they looked at trucking it and everything else. But the owner of this, which was one of the Koch brothers, needed it really fast. So we hired the Antonov, and the entire America's Cup boat fit inside this aircraft.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And they flew it to the East Coast.
So that's a bit of a surprise. That's a surprise solution that you came up with here, John. I mean, we would think that we'd still be confined to water or perhaps breaking it down into smaller pieces and putting it on trucks. But one of the last things I would think about would be putting a huge object like that in the air.
Yes, but it can be done, but it's expensive. They will fly, they will pick up the object anywhere in the world. And this is how it was explained to me by the accounting department. And it's hard to check this for accuracy because a lot of this is secret information. But they said this company, when the Soviet Union, fell apart, this company bought these largest aircraft, and now they're available for hire. They'll pick up an object anywhere in the world, from a tiny, you want to transport an iPod, they will, or to a huge propeller or America's Cup boat. They'll pick it up anywhere in the world and deliver it anywhere in the world for a flat $1 million fee.
For $1 million?
$1 million.
And it's a flat fee regardless of the object?
That's how it was explained to me. Okay. I can't confirm that,
right,
per se.
But that makes sense when you're talking about a $500,000 a day burn rate of cash for an organization being down, downtime.
It was relatively cheap.
Yeah. And when you talk about the time to fly versus the time to ship something, for instance, across the Atlantic, at $500,000 a day, you're all of a sudden you're saving money.
But what's also interesting is they had to shut down the highways of Houston to get this thing.
Mm.
And they brought it in the middle of the night, shut down all of George Bush International Airport. It was before the commercial flights really opened. And then they flew it to this relatively small airport in South Korea. And this was a behemoth of a plane jet. It was just cool looking at this plane.
So you've seen it firsthand? Wow. Okay.
Well, enormous.
I want to ask you more about that, but listeners, stick around. We do need to take a break. We're going to find out more about, here I thought we were going to talk about transporting things only via ships, and we found out that there is an alternative there, and we'll see how they work together too. So stick with this. We're going to take a brief break right now to hear from our sponsor, Six Maritime.
Six Maritime is a leading provider of professional security services for the maritime industry. Using state-of-the-art military and industry practices, Six Maritime provides clients with tailor-made, cost-effective solutions that ensure both safety and security in every environment. Six Maritime specializes in the use of early threat detection technology for both mobile and immobile clients, giving them increased warning time to any threat. Avoid the violence, deter attackers, keep your crew and cargo safe. Leading the next generation of security, logistically simple, technologically advanced. Six Maritime. To learn more, visit sixmaritime.com.
Thanks for staying with us. So, John, we're having this interesting discussion about how we can combine, actually, air transport with sea transport. Sometimes, from what you've explained to us, because of the time savings, it can actually be a cost saving, even at $1 million flight, to transport a large object.
Yes, any flight to transport anything, it's going to consume 40 times the amount of fuel. So the ship is the most efficient means of transport in the world. Mm-hmm. A truck consumes, to move the same container, 4 times the amount of fuel as a ship.
Wow.
And a plane is 40 times.
Wow. Now, what about rail? I thought rail was pretty efficient.
I have to check the number. I think it's slightly better than a truck, so 2 to 3 times less efficient than a ship.
And do you know why? I mean, do you know why the relative efficiency of a ship is so much better?
Well, you have a boat. What sort of boat do you have?
I have a sailboat now, so it's extremely efficient as far as fuel economy.
Is it 30 feet?
Yeah, Catalina 30.
Now, you stay on the dock, and can you push that and move it with 2 fingers?
The boat?
Yeah. Or a few.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a foot off the dock.
Yeah, I can lean over and push it.
Now you take that boat and put it on a trailer. Are you going to be able to?
I think I see where you're going.
You're going to need five friends to push that.
Right.
Same foot.
Yeah.
So, there's just very little friction and less hills. When you transport on a train, you got to go up hills, down hills. That consumes more fuel. The ocean is flat.
Yeah. Okay.
A plane's got to climb to 10,000 feet at least. That's consuming a lot of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next option, if it doesn't fit on a container ship and you don't want to hire the Antonov, or if it's too big for the Antonov, the next option is a heavy lift ship. And this is how we got our heavy lift crane, went on a heavy lift ship.
Mm-hmm.
So these are ships specifically designed to carry large and unusual objects. We had the most basic of heavy lift ships for this crane hoist. It's a traditional ship, but a heavy lift ship looks almost like a tanker, where it's got a deck that's flat with a little freeboard. It's pretty close to the waterline, because the higher you build the ship, the more stability problem you have.
Right.
It's just a flat open deck with a lot of pad eyes on the deck, a lot of stuff to trip over, because they have to continually move, or depending on what cargo it is, where they're going to do down. Also, a lot of these, they have welders on board, so weld pad eyes just for a specific cargo.
Yeah.
And the load plan, you tell this company, I want to transport this crane. The company will get the dimensions of the crane and figure out exactly what pad eyes to use, if additional pad eyes need to be welded, and this will be done in port. And it'll come on, and you need a very large crane. We use the shipyard scissor lift crane. They're the largest cranes in the world, to lift this off the heavy lift and put it on our ship, which was in dry dock. And then the next step, the largest are... So the USS Cole, when I was on my first ship, which was 99-2000, I have to check the date, this Yemeni's boat came out to the USS Cole, filled with explosives, blew a hole in the side of the Cole.
I remember that.
Now, the economical solution would be to scrap that destroyer and build a new one. It made no sense to transport it and try to... It was so extensively damaged. However, the United States... had a PR problem.
Sure.
Part of our strength is in the fact that we can get stuff done, we can be anywhere, we can fix anything. So they decided they're going to move this ship.
Yeah.
They hired one of the largest heavy lift ships. I believe it was the Marlin. And this is a semi-submersible heavy lift. So this ship is a very flat deck, but the whole deck can submerge underwater. So they fill it with water and it submerges. So all you see is the smokestacks back aft, and the bridge and accommodations area up forward.
Wow.
The rest of the ship will go underwater. They'll position it underneath something like the coal, and then they'll start pumping out the ballast tanks, and they can lift entire ships with these heavy lift ships.
Hmm.
And these heavy lift ships keep getting bigger and bigger. The largest right now is the Peter Schelte, which can actually lift entire oil platforms. So if they're decommissioning these ones off of Santa Barbara, it can actually go in it. And it is two VLCC, so very large crew carrier, tanker hulls that are connected together. And these two enormous tankers that are connected will go and actually, one will go on one side of the oil rig, one will go on the other, and they will go underneath this enormous platform. And then they'll start, and both hulls will start rising as they pump out ballast water.
Right.
And they can move these enormous oil rigs that they previously used to have to bring a crane barge in and dismantle piece by piece.
Wow.
Now they can lift up the entire
thing. That's incredible. And what an amazing feat of engineering.
So they say the largest ship in the world is now the Tripoli, Maersk Tripoli.
Right.
And that's a bit of a misnomer because there have been larger ships in the world. The Seaways Giant, which went by a few different names, was larger, but it's been since scrapped.
Mm-hmm.
So the Maersk Tripoli is the largest ship in the world now, but it's not the largest ship ever built.
What was the giant? What type of vessel?
A crude carrier.
A crude.
Okay. Very interesting ship. If you Google that, it was in the Iran-Iraq war. It had been bombed. And interesting history. We have an article on GCAP. You can look it up. Nock Nevis, I think, was another name for it. But that's been scrapped. So Tripoli is currently the largest ship. And they are building the Shell Prelude, which is going to be significantly larger. But they're also the same shipyard that's building the Maersk Tripoli is building the Peter Schelte, which very slightly, not quite as long as Tripoli. But there are two of them. So in my opinion, it's twice the ship. It may not be quite as long as the Tripoli. It's just short of the overall length.
Right.
But there are two of them connected together. It looks like this enormous, massive catamaran.
Huh.
So that, in my opinion, and Maersk isn't going to like this, that's the largest ship. Certainly, if not just... How do you define largest? Well, in the definition of what displaces the most water, it's the heaviest.
It would
be the Peter Schelte.
Yeah, it would definitely be
that. At least until
this
Prelude comes out next year.
So when you say catamaran, so they're parallel, and the main part of the vessels are parallel to each other, side by side. And the space in the middle is where whatever cargo or large piece of cargo that they're carrying goes, obviously.
Yeah, so these... Now, under oil platforms are connected to the sea floor.
Right.
You know, they have steel structures, and they're built up in relatively shallow water, a few hundred feet built up, and then there'll be this huge platform. Well, this one hull will go on one side of it, the other hull will go on the other side of it. And then, so yes, this oil, this is for a very specific purpose.
So... when they're underway, because this is fascinating, when they're underway, are they always connected, or do they actually separate, or are they always connected?
They are always connected. Okay. And what's also unusual is there's just a bridge, so there's a watchstander on one of the hulls people live. The other one doesn't have a bridge, but the other one has its own propulsion units, and they actually have to work in tandem, so they have to steer...
Wow.
So they have to connect. There's a wireless, you know, a wired network interface that just they send a computer signal to the engines on the port hull, and that has to be continuously synchronized with the starboard hull, because if one hull decided to go forward while the other one went aft, it would just tear this superstructure off. So there's a lot of technology involved with these, but there are a lot of interesting heavy lift ships that are being built, and they're being built larger and larger each year. The largest is this All Seas Peter Schelte. But just do me a favor and go into G Captain on the sidebar, the right hand side, at the bottom of the right hand side is a little Google search. Just put in heavy lift, and it'll bring up tons of articles with pictures of some of the coolest vessels. These are some of the coolest, most interesting vessels you'll have seen.
Oh, well, you've piqued my interest on it. I'm fascinated by it. I want to see some pictures of that parallel-type ship. Now, speaking of size, let me go back to something that we've talked about before and that had a totally different salvage operation, and maybe because it was in such shallow waters, but the Costa Concordia. Very, very large cruise ship. Would one of these vessels be able to handle that?
Potentially, and the Costa Concordia, they are looking. They are actually, I think they have bids out for the newest heavy lift vessels. So that is a real opportunity. Other opportunities just to get these, to get the Costa Concordia buoyant. They actually welded buoyancy tanks on the Costa Concordia and tow it. I think that's what they're going to end up doing, just towing it in place. But because first they can't use it as it is right now. The Costa Concordia ran up on the beach on
right,
the rocks.
Right.
So nothing can get under. There are just rocks underneath.
Right.
So one important thing for these really large semi-submersible heavy lift ships is they don't need much water, but they need enough water so that they can submerge underneath this object. They
right.
can't do that with a Concordia.
Right. And are they more designed in for taking things on out at sea as opposed to at the docks, or both?
Would it,
So you're saying that they do need to submerge. Well, I suppose if you were taking on or lading large objects at the dock, you wouldn't necessarily need to submerge a thing. I'm just looking at where these objects can be loaded onto the vessel.
If you go to the shipyards in South Korea, you will see one of these enormous heavy lift ships come in once a week, once every 2 weeks.
Really?
When we'd hear that they were coming in, I'd always go down and see it because they were amazing. But they will submerge right next to the dock.
Right, okay.
If it depends on the size of the object. If the object is... does it exceed the shipyards? Shipyard has the largest cranes in the world. If the object is too heavy for the crane, then the object has to be able to float on its own and float into the dry dock. If it can be lifted by the crane, though, the crane usually will lift it. So it depends on the weight and size, whether the crane can carry it or not.
Got it. Yep. Interesting. We're about out of time, John. It's a really interesting subject this week, and I'm glad. I like our new format because we do get to dig deeper into this. So in the next 1 or 2 minutes, how would you like to finish up the conversation?
Well, I did follow up on last week's, accuracy and making sure that the important things that we tell you in the radio show are accurate. It's something that's important to Jeff and I. So back 2 years ago, I did a Freedom of Information request. One of my points of contention last week was that absolutely nothing was done for the Deepwater Horizon. There was no pictures taken. There's nothing been released to the public. So 2 years ago, I did a Freedom of Information Act request saying there has to be someone who's taken a picture of the Deepwater Horizon on the seafloor. And it's been in the government process for years. So last week, at the end of our podcast, I called up Washington, I called up various Freedom of Information Act, and I said, it's been 2 years, this is enough, guys. And the Coast Guard, to their credit, put a whole team of guys looking for this footage just in the last week. And I do report that we have found footage of the Deepwater Horizon. And after a team of Coast Guard men have been pouring through this for 2 years looking for footage, we have one picture of the propeller on the Deepwater Horizon.
Really?
So I was a little wrong in saying that nothing exists of forensic evidence. There does exist a picture of one of the six propellers that was on the Deepwater
Horizon. A picture. Wow.
A single picture.
Okay.
So I wanted to say that correction here.
Well, good. Good. We appreciate that. And it's good that you're keeping the government and the coasties on their toes.
Yes.
I know they always smile when they see you coming. Good. And final thoughts on transporting large objects.
This is something you really have to see. So go into GCAP and do that heavy lift search. There's a video on GCAP. The ship I was on and built in South Korea, the whole accommodations module was lifted by a crane. And you can find those videos and those pictures on GCAP. And you're going to have to do a little searching, but amazing stuff. And we'll link to some of them in the show notes.
Very good. Okay. And listeners, as we mentioned to you last week, be sure and pass along a link to GCaptain. We want to keep this going, but the only way that we can keep the radio show going is if we have enough listeners and your support. So we appreciate you listening, and we appreciate you passing on the link to our show. So thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next week to keep up with what's going on in the maritime and offshore industry. On behalf of John Conrad and myself, Jeff Eccles, we look forward to speaking with you again next week. Be well and be safe.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest in maritime and offshore news. GCaptain Radio is a production of GCaptain.com and is recorded weekly in Morro Bay, California. For more information or to be a guest on the show, visit GCaptain.com.